You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 27th of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, it's the start of another week. It's Aryan Britannia, so that means we must have Max Musson from Western Spring with us today. Max, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. It's been a restful day for me today. I haven't really done a tremendous amount of exerting things, but we've had good weather up until today. It's a little bit wet today, but we've had the latter part of the week and yesterday were very sunny and very pleasurable to be out in the sunshine and just enjoying nature's bounty, basically.
Nothing like England in the summertime, is there? And of course, we've got lots to look forward to this week. We've got the results of the European Union elections coming out. Unfortunately, they haven't come out at the time that we are recording this, but we have had good news from Theresa May stepping down at long last. I mean, she really held on with gritted teeth there right till the very end, didn't she? And then just when she actually left, this blubbering in tears at the end of it, I think that gives us a good gauge of just how much the country hates her in the fact that normally if you see a woman and she breaks down in tears, you feel sympathy. You feel sorry for her. But each time I see that, I just laugh. And I don't feel wicked in doing that. I think that I'm quite just in doing that. Looking through the reports elsewhere, you've got members of the Police Federation that are doing the same. You've got members of her own Conservative Party doing the same, saying thank God she's gone. Apparently she barricaded herself in to number 10 for almost 48 hours before she finally stepped down. The 1922 committee, they were talking about rewriting the Conservative Party constitution so that they could kick her out. And I think that was the final threat. I think she was told, if you don't go tomorrow, we are going to change the constitution and kick you out. Because she was hoping to force through that dreadful deal of hers, which is basically just another treaty with the European Union. She was hoping to force that through a fourth time. I mean, how embarrassing was that? Nobody was going to vote for it. And the change was, this time, she had tacked on at the end of it and will give the country another referendum. Something she has talked about for so long about we can't possibly do that, we mustn't do that, that would ruin the public's belief in democracy. And yet she was prepared to do that because she was so desperate to get all the lefties supporting her. Absolutely disgusting. And to see the way that she's just held on to power there, just because of her ego, I think, just because she loved being prime minister, because I can't think of any other reason why she would have held on for so long. It's just an ego sort of thing, really. Well, before we get into her legacy, which we're going to talk about today, what did you think of her actual leaving speech and the lead up to that, Max?
Well, I was quite amused by the fact that she quoted Sir Nicholas Winton.
Oh, yes, the Hollyhocks.
Some people have commented to me that it's amazing that even in her resignation speech, she could get in something about the Holocaust. But the most amusing aspect of it for me was the fact that she quoted a saying that he mentioned to her that she must have recorded and sort of taken on board at the time, one would have thought, which was that compromise is not a dirty word. And yet when you see the way that she has constantly tried to get other parliamentarians to bow to her will and to accept the dog's breakfast of a Brexit that she's prepared for everybody, it's quite obvious that she didn't really learn anything from what Sir Nicholas Winton had said to her, because she, you know, it appears it was her inability to compromise that has led to such great opposition to a bill from both sides, effectively. So it was a sort of ironic, really, and that just made me chuckle. I look with my sort of looking at the speech from the point of view of my head, I had to sort of whoop with delight at the fact that she was going, and it's pleased me no end that she was so upset about leaving the premiership, because she has done so much damage really to politics in this country. I think from the heart point of view, though, I don't like seeing anybody getting upset, particularly when they feel passionately about things. And so I was in two minds really as to how I took the bit of the sob at the end. Looking back on it, I think she, as I said, has done so much damage to British politics that we can afford to be hard-hearted in terms of our view of her and her legacy, basically.
Yeah, there was no crying over the victims of her policies. She's only crying there at the end because she's lost her job. You know, there was no sympathy for the victims of the Muslim rape gangs. She just wanted to silence the people that were speaking up about it. There's no sobbing at all the people that have been killed by blacks, thanks to her importing them into the country. I mean, one of the things I wanted to talk about here, though, the first thing on the list here, and this is just while she was Home Secretary, she imported more foreigners into the country than ever before since 1066, possibly more than the Norman invasion, just under her watch. And this is while the Tory party themselves said that they were going to get immigration down to 10,000 a year. This year, I believe the net immigration was 600,000. That's just the ones that they know about. So half a million, not 10,000, but well over half a million this year. Probably more than that the year before. I haven't got the exact figures here, but basically, you know, just replacing white people, huge swathes of the country have been turned into foreign lands under her. And yet they seem to think that she would be a suitable person to put in as prime minister, parachute her in after David Cameron when he stepped down. And yet I think her record when she was Home Secretary was absolutely abominable. Have you ever known such a high amount of foreigners to come into Britain before, apart from under her watch, Max?
Well, no, I think that the immigration that we've suffered in this country over the last decade, or perhaps two decades, really, has been unprecedented. It's been estimated by various people that the number of new arrivals, I can't think quite what the date is, but there is a date around about 1990, 1995 or something of that sort, where since which more immigrants have come into the UK than had ever come into the country since time immemorial, basically. Both the Conservatives and the Labour governments beforehand have conspired to bring about a massive demographic change in this country. They've done this without the consent of the British people. They've done this with the obvious opposition from the British people, because whenever there have been polls taken on this particular issue, then people have expressed their dissatisfaction with the levels of immigration and have wanted immigration levels to be reduced down to the sort of insignificant levels that existed prior to, say, the 1970s. It was the prior Labour governments plus the Conservative governments of David Cameron and Theresa May that have just continually given a sop to the British people and have pretended that their intention was to reduce immigration, whereas the net effect of their policies was to facilitate the largest transfer of population into this country that there's ever been.
I think it was even more than Jack Straw. I think she let even more people into the country than Jack Straw. She made £50 million worth of cuts to the border agency at this time. I mean, people were just flooding into the country. And while she was doing that, while she was just allowing in all these brown-skinned folks from the third world, she banned Matthew Heimbach from entering the country. Matthew Heimbach, the American patriot at the time, he was leading the Traditionalist Workers' Party. I think he may have actually been in the Traditionalist Youth Network. He may not have even had the TWP at the time. He wasn't really that well known. He was known for talking about traditionalism, Orthodox Christianity, sticking to Christian traditions, basically, and she just banned him. One day he got a letter that just came through to his house saying, you're not allowed into England. You're not allowed into the country of your ancestors. She did the same to Richard Spencer. She banned Richard Spencer from coming into Britain as well in the same year. So while all these foreigners were coming in, at the same time, she was banning white people who put other white people's needs above their own, nationalists, patriots, and said, well, we don't want them coming into the country. We don't want white people who care about other whites coming into the country. We just want people coming in that just want to take and that hate other white people. Do you remember what this happening, Max, when she banned Matt Heimbach and Richard Spencer from coming in?
Yes, I do, and I think there have been other people more recently. Wasn't Lauren Southern, wasn't she banned from entering the UK?
Yes, yeah, and her boyfriend.
And as far as people who are of British descent are concerned, there have been quite a large number of people who whose parents emigrated to Australia, or whose grandparents or great grandparents emigrated to Australia or South Africa or some other part of what was then the British Empire, and who have then wanted to come back to the UK, and they've been prevented from doing so. It's quite a routine thing to actually see people of particularly South African descent, people who are British, whose parents and grandparents, etc., went out to South Africa, who have then had life made very difficult for them by the black majority government in South Africa, and who wanted to come to the UK to live, and who have been prevented from doing so. And that is just utterly ridiculous. You know, when a country turns away people who are of our own ethnic stock and who are wanting to return to this country because they're being persecuted and treated as second-class citizens in a faraway African country. You know, for those people to be prevented from coming into the country, for those people to have to comply with the same immigration rules that exist for everybody else is just ridiculous. You know, it's people, you know, can turn around and say that it's racist. It's not really racist. It's looking after your own kind, looking after people who are part of your extended family. And for somebody from South Africa who perhaps has British grandparents, etc., for them to have to struggle to meet the same requirements as, say, an Eskimo who has never been to the UK is just patently ridiculous.
It's offensive. I mean, these people should be allowed in as refugees fleeing what's happening in South Africa. We'll get on to Theresa May in South Africa in a moment. I should just make a correction there. I said Lauren Southern's boyfriend was banned from coming in. It wasn't. It was Brittany Pettibone and her fiancé Martin Selner. They were both banned from entering Britain. And the reason why Brittany Pettibone wanted to come in, I mean, she was a journalist. She just wanted to interview Tommy Robinson. And I mean, we hear all the time about how journalists aren't allowed into China. They're not allowed to speak to people. And of course, this is happening in supposedly the democratic West. I mean, the situation of repression of free speech and suppression of journalism is just as bad over here now that it is in China. And yet you won't see the mainstream press saying anything about it. Of course, the other thing that she did while all this was going on, while we had floods of foreigners coming into the country and the crime rate shot through the roof, she decided to get rid of 20,000 police officers and 15,000 staff that were actually working for them, which, of course, all the police were up in arms about. They said the knock-on effect of this is we're going to lose all the community policing. If we lose the community policing, we will lose our intelligence gathering. If we lose our intelligence gathering, we won't be able to prevent crimes such as terrorist attacks from happening. Now, it was a police officer that she actually gave an award to that is on record as telling her, all that, and also saying that another knock-on result will be that the police will then have to be wearing armour and they'll have to be armed, which is, of course, what we see now, stab vests and tasers. But the main thing about this was he warned her that there would be terrorist attacks because of this, and there were terrorist attacks. We had drummer Lee Rigby, he was beheaded. We had the London Bridge attack. We had the Manchester Arena nail bomb. We had other drive-by attacks that took place. And this is why we hadn't actually had any since 7/7, is because we still had community policing. And Theresa May got rid of all that when she got rid of 20,000 police officers. And it was foretold to her that there would be terrorist attacks. And there were terrorist attacks. And this is a direct cause of her actions here, getting rid of the police. And you've mentioned about the police a few times on this program, Max, about how disheartened they are and how demoralized they are by what she's done to them. And now that she's actually stepped down, the police are all clapping and cheering and saying, well done, fantastic. You know, there's a whole article on Breitbart with the response from the police to Theresa May stepping down. What did you think about this one?
What do I think about that? Well, yeah, I can see that would be the case. As you quite rightly said, you know, I've spoken before about the disillusionment and the demoralization of the police force, and the same situation must exist for the border agency as well. You know, for them to be in a situation where they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, you know, whatever they do actually turns out to be wrong, and where they are so understaffed that they can't really fulfill their duties, because I don't think that our border agency staff are sufficient to properly patrol the borders of Britain and the coastline of Britain. And I think that as far as our police are concerned, the numbers are significantly down on what they have been in the past. And I think, as a general rule, people now have resigned themselves to expecting a poorer level of service from the police than they would have received in the past. I know of people who have reported crimes, and apart from being given a crime number, that nothing actually concrete has actually been done about the fact that they've been a victim.
Yeah, they only investigate burglaries if it happens on the odd numbers of a street or on the even numbers of a street. If it's a theft of under £50, they won't investigate it. I think in some parts of the country now, if there isn't even any CCTV, they won't investigate it. And only 5% of all crime actually gets solved. So that was her legacy from when she was in the Home Office, when she was Home Secretary. Then she got parachuted in as Prime Minister, and one of the first things she did was promote her buddy Amber Rudd to Home Secretary, who had been working underneath her in the Home Office previously. And pretty much straight away, Amber Rudd ended up banning the nationalist youth group National Action as terrorists. She prescribed this organisation, even though they hadn't actually been charged with committing any violent crimes. And the reason for banning them was because of a rather bad taste joke that was sent out as a tweet that was attributed to them. And of course, we've talked about this quite a few times, and the knock-on effect of that, which has really been to sort of terrify youngsters from having anything to do with nationalism. But I mean, when you really whittle it down, that's what it boils down to, was a tweet that was sent out. And I'm just so grateful that Amber Rudd has said that she is not going to be standing for Prime Minister or leader of the Conservative Party in the Conservative Party election that they're now going to have. I am very pleased she is not going to put her hat into the ring for that one, because I think Amber Rudd is just as bad as Theresa May. I mean, we haven't had anything like this since the war, when they banned Oswald Mosley's Union of Fascists and stuck them all in prison under something 18B, Regulation 18B. We hadn't actually had any nationalists that have been described as terrorists since then. And now, after this National Action thing, I mean, we see it quite a lot. Facebook seem to be drawing links between white nationalism and terrorism. And of course, the main terrorist threat is the same as it has always been. It's jihadis, it's Islamics. And the people that have been jailed since this prescribing of National Action, the people that have been accused and found guilty of being members of National Action, it's all been over posts made in chat rooms. None of it's been about plotting to carry out any terrorist activity. None of it has even been for putting stickers up or posters up, not doing demonstrations, simply just for talking in chat rooms to other ex-members. So, you know, I mean, this is really shocking. I think that's something that she'll be remembered for well into the future, what she did here.
Well, I think that one of the aspects here was that while she was Home Secretary, Theresa May, during the Cameron government, she and David Cameron decided upon a plan of action that they would take against what they saw as extremism. And whereas previously the police had restricted themselves to taking action against those people who were involved in illegal activities, they announced that they would make a significant change and in future target people who were
non-violent extremists.
Well, that's right, non-violent extremists, people who were involved in any sort of political activity that they disagreed with, but who didn't break the existing laws. And so this is a, you know, this was a major step in terms of undermining the British way of life. And it's interesting that in order to justify their position with regard to extremism, that both Theresa May and David Cameron quoted the maintenance of British values, when in reality tolerance of different people's opinions was a British value, and as long as somebody stayed within the law, then the law left them alone. That was a custom within our society that reflected the British value of a freedom of expression and democracy. And yet David Cameron, I believe, began his speech when he sort of announced this initiative, stating that for too long we have been passively a passively tolerant society, saying to our citizens, as long as you obey the law, we'll leave you alone. And, you know, he then went on to sort of say that wouldn't be the case any longer, and didn't really see the irony that he was justifying this move to deprive people of what was a British value by claiming that it was in order to preserve British values. It was
free
just
speech.
A nonsense, really, and it was just a pretext. The whole thing has just been a pretext to disrupt and to take action against people who the government whose views the government doesn't like.
The opposition, basically, people that actually do have opposition, principled opposition, as Sargon calls it, people that will speak out and say, "Well, we don't agree with the government's policies." Well, then you become a hater. You become a hater and you must be removed from Facebook, you must be removed from Twitter, you must be removed from YouTube. And all of this goes against the British values of free speech and tolerance for other people's viewpoints. And as you say, Max, you know, they say it with a straight face. You know, they talk about the British values of tolerance while being the most intolerant administration that we've ever had in Britain. We had the Snoopers Charter under her watch as well, which meant that they could just look into people's emails, look into people's communications. They didn't really have to have any justification for that. They could just say, well, it's a terrorist threat, so you know, we don't actually need any evidence. And because of this, it means that when people are arrested, they can now take your mobile phone, go through all your mobile phone, go through all your social media, go through everything, in fact. I mean, it used to be that the only reason that they could have for searching somebody's house is if they were caught with drugs. But nowadays, if it's something to do with nationalism or hate speech, they seem to have the right to break the door down and go through all your stuff, take away your computer, take away your phone, take away all the things that people need for modern day living to stay in touch with everyone, and the police can just take that away, and that happened under her watch as well.
And then this is basically where the Terrorism Act, I don't know whether the Terrorism Act was brought in under the Conservatives. I think it might have been actually the previous Labour government. But the Terrorism Act effectively legislated with a very broad brush, which meant that Almost any kind of activity could be interpreted as an act of terrorism by the current Home Secretary. And by doing that, it then means that the government have got a free hand to cherry pick the people that they want to persecute using this new legislation. And so this decision, this initiative to make law-abiding people who hold views that the government don't like, in order to make them to designate them as extremists and therefore bring them within the scope of disruptive measures, is just another one, another facet of this same thing, which is an erosion of our freedoms and an erosion of the freedom of expression and freedom of speech in this country.
Yeah, counter-extremism bill, I think she tried to push that through, and I think that actually failed because the wording was just far too woolly, and it would have included everyone. I saw Dominic Raab on Andrew Marr today, and he was talking about the things he would do if he was Prime Minister, and one of the things he said he would do is he would very much strengthen the right that we have to free speech and jury trials, which I thought was very good. Unfortunately, he did also say that he would keep the 0.7% of GDP that went on foreign aid. He would keep that, but he said that he would, increase the protections we have for free speech rather than continue eroding them, which is, of course, something that was started by David Cameron and Theresa May with this non-violent extremism thing. And of course, this has enabled them to concentrate the anti-terrorist police onto their political opponents. While this was going on, she then invited Muslims to investigate their own Sharia courts. She set up a big inquiry into the Sharia courts. Okay, well done, you know, what they need to be inquired into. And then she had imams on the council. So it was basically Muslims investigating themselves. And of course, they discovered that, yes, Sharia is compatible with UK law. I mean, who would have thought that? Beheading people and chopping people's hands off, that's compatible with UK law. Beating your wife, that's compatible with UK law, according to these imams. I'm sure all of us must have seen this dreadful picture of her wearing a niqab, this scarf over her head, which was very popular at the time these terrorist acts were being carried out by jihadis. And then there's this picture of Theresa May sucking up to the very same people by wearing this headscarf. I mean, what do you think about these Sharia courts and that investigation she did, Max? Do you remember that one?
I don't specifically remember that, but I know that that the Sharia courts have been spreading throughout the UK, that they're multiplying in terms of numbers. And effectively what we're doing is we are, by allowing this and by permitting this, the government are creating a situation where there are two parallel legal systems. And obviously what will happen in the fullness of time, it may not be next year or the year after, but in the fullness of time, we will have a situation where particularly if the Muslim population continues to grow in this country, where possibly the those people who wish to be governed by Sharia law will begin to rival in terms of numbers those people who wish to stick to English law, and will have a situation where potentially the majority of British people could be forced to submit to Sharia law, even though they are not Muslims. And this is the long-term danger of this sort of thing. And I think that when you have politicians dressing in controversial clothing that would normally only be associated with somebody who is a very strict adherent of a particular religion, then that sort of thing is, again, an expression of surrender. And I think that in terms of any issue that relates to British culture or Britishness, what we've seen with Theresa May is a willingness to surrender even when there's no need to surrender. You know, she could attend meetings with Muslim leaders without having to wear the headscarves and things. And the headdresses that Muslim women are known to wear, because If you look at the previous female prime minister, Maggie Thatcher, she never did anything of that sort. And that didn't damage her reputation with the Muslim community. So, you know, that there is no need to do these sort of things. It just creates, it just increases the extent to which, our society, is fragmented. And you know, very sadly, as we've agreed so many times in the past, the creation of a multiracial society, particularly a multiracial and a multicultural society where each culture is given equal standing within the political system and within the overall cultural sphere of the country, then what you have is a situation where the existing native culture is just continually being eroded, and that pretty much mirrors what the decline in the population of the indigenous British as well, and this is something that we need to work to oppose and to reverse.
I think it just increases the contempt for her when she's dressing up in fancy dress like that and then lying to us basically and saying, oh, well, these courts, they just deal with divorce. I mean, of course, they start out just dealing with divorce and marriage things, but that's not all of Sharia law, is it? That's just a small part of it. And even that part of it, they say is very oppressive to women. And she claims to be a feminist, and yet there she is with a hijab on. So while she's letting the Muslims investigate themselves, she's then preparing a bill to give YouTubers a minimum of 6 years in prison if they make a popular video. Mark Cullett did a very good job of highlighting this last year and getting people to write in. There was a public inquiry looking into how they should prosecute people for making far-right propaganda, videos. And basically, it comes down to, if you make a popular video and it goes viral, and if you get a lot of subscribers to your YouTube channel, then that means you get a minimum of 6 years. And just unbelievable. And of course, nobody has defined what far-right propaganda is in law. It just seems to be whatever the left don't like, whoever they don't like, they denounce as being far-right, and then they're going to try and make a law around it. I can see that actually falling apart because the wording is so woolly, and they would have to actually say exactly what far-right propaganda is. And a lot of the time, that would mean that just normal conservatives, some of the things that they say, they would say need to be banned. This is why apparently Twitter haven't put in an automatic AI system that gets rid of so-called far-right content, because they say Donald Trump's talking about Muslims. It would get Donald Trump banned and a lot of these Republican politicians. That's because what they now call far-right is just basically common sense. I think we're going to find out the results of this bill and this inquiry probably sometime this year. I know I wrote in and it was loads of pages you had to go through and then sort of add your own views on it. And I was just pointing out that, the inconsistency in this and the hypocrisy that's in it, and that it's just basically silencing free speech and preventing people from being able to speak their mind. Next up, this happened really after Donald Trump was elected. He said, if I remember rightly, Nigel Farage went out there to visit him, and Donald Trump said, well, can we make Nigel Farage our go-between Britain and America? I mean, what a fantastic chance there. What an absolutely fantastic chance. You've got you've got Britain, who's supposed to be leaving the EU. You've got the American president, and the first person to come and see him, the first person he wants to see is this British politician. And he says, let's make this British politician the diplomat between us. You know, he's opened out the hand of friendship, the first country that he does that to. And how does Theresa May respond to this? She mocks and ridicules Nigel Farage and says that there's no way on earth that they would have anything to do with him. I mean, talk about stabbing the country in the back. And you must remember this when Trump got elected and this happened, Max.
Yeah, I do. That's right. There's an old adage that... people like them, and it's fairly obvious that there is a great rapport between Farage and Trump. And and as you say, the obvious thing would have been, particularly I imagine Farage would have been quite willing to have taken on such a role.
He offered to,
and the obvious thing to have done would have been to do that, because with the Brexit negotiations that Theresa May was under, it would have strengthened her hand no end to have had a very good relationship with Donald Trump. Whereas we've had this this situation now where Donald Trump has been snubbed to some degree already, and it looks as if a lot of politicians in this country want to snub him some more when he comes over to the UK shortly. And this is in stark contrast to what Theresa May could have done and to what the government could have done in terms of creating a superb relationship between Britain and the United States, and therefore paving the way for a very lucrative trade deal with the USA once we'd left the European Union. And it's just short-sightedness, it's just pettiness and spitefulness, really, that the government you have to assume Theresa May, because she was the head of the government, that the government didn't want, were prepared to risk having a poor relationship with the United States of America rather than engage with somebody that they perhaps held responsible for the Brexit result in the first place. And really, what the government should have done is they should have embraced the democratic decision that was made and made the best of the situation instead of being petty and therefore making the situation far worse, and in fact creating what's been over the last 3 years or so now an absolutely awful atmosphere in the country, where there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, where Donald Trump, to some extent, has been alienated by, as I say, this rudeness, where we've, to a great extent, alienated the populations of the other member states of the European Union, just simply by virtue of the fact that the European Union's business has almost entirely been held on hold, in the same way that our business of government has been on hold for the last 3 years, just because this major issue hasn't yet been settled. And it should have been settled very quickly, right at the outset, so that there was certainty. But it's the ongoing uncertainty that is causing all the problems, because businesses need to have a degree of certainty with regard to the future, so that they know how to plan and that they know what how they can best position their resources in order to plan and take advantage of the future. And but we're in a situation where countries that want to international businesses and countries that want to invest in Britain don't know whether they should, because they don't know what terms they will be engaging with us. Countries that want to trade with us are sort of shying back because we're still part of the European Union and we still can't complete trade deals with them. And they don't know what the trading situation is going to be in the future, whether we're going to be in the European Union, whether we're going to be out of the European Union or whatever. And it's just created this awful, awful situation, which, you have to say, is largely down to Theresa May and the fact that she's completely and utterly bungled all of the Brexit negotiations.
She's completely incompetent. I mean, this was an absolutely fantastic opportunity that just fell into her lap, and she rejected it and alienated him instead. And then when she actually set about doing the Brexit thing, she kept saying Brexit means Brexit. No deal is better than a bad deal. She said over 110 times that if she couldn't get a deal through, that we would be leaving with no deal. And she set up a fake Brexit department, which we didn't know was fake at first. I mean, they did certainly didn't know they were fake. They did all the work on setting up what they thought was going to be the deal that the Conservative Party were going to make with the EU. I think Dominic Raab, he was the Brexit secretary, and they had a whole department working on this. But unbeknownst to them, while they were working on their deal, Theresa May goes and does a different deal behind their backs, completely behind their backs, with nobody else knowing about it, which she then reveals to the Conservative Party at their Chequers conference, at which point Dominic Raab resigns, various other MPs resign, and they all say, well, this is terrible. This is another treaty. This isn't a deal. This is another treaty. It makes Britain a colony of the EU. It's even worse than the deal that we've had now. Even worse than the Lisbon Treaty and the Schengen Agreement. Worse than all of that. And that was what Theresa May did. And I don't understand how she wasn't hounded out of office for doing that. Because it just seems so obvious to me that whole Brexit department, that whole Brexit secretary rubbish was just fake. It was all counterfeit because she was doing something else entirely behind everybody else's backs. I was just in a state of shock when this happened. I just thought, how can she get away with that? How can she get away with that? Totally ignoring everything that the department has been working on for the last year and a half. I'm not surprised they resigned. This is what happened, isn't it, Max? You know, she did go behind their backs, didn't she?
Well, she certainly did go behind their backs. I think that all of this really stems from, again, something which I believe started with the prior Labour governments, where there was increasingly adopted a kind of presidential way of running the cabinet, where the Prime Minister would tend to do their own thing, and if they knew that certain sections of the cabinet were going to oppose their wishes, those people would be progressively excluded from the decision making process. And I think that kind of thing is what's responsible here, that Theresa May just decided that what she thought was the best thing, and she didn't really think about holding the cabinet together. She didn't think about cabinet responsibility, you know, the sort of thing that people speak about so often, but which often doesn't actually exist. There have been a number of people who, since Theresa May has resigned, who have come forward and said that, you know, they felt that a deal could be done on the basis of the work that they were doing, and yet she insisted that the deal had to be her deal, and because nobody wanted her deal, it just frustrated the whole process.
The power went to her head. The power went to her head, and her arrogance and her ego was so much that she called an election. She had no need to call an election. David Cameron had left her with quite a considerable mandate to rule. And instead of just going on with that, she decided that she was going to call an election. For some reason, she thought that she was popular enough to win an election. And she didn't win the election. She didn't even win a majority in the election. She ended up having to go to the Union Party of Northern Ireland and do a deal with them so that she could rule in coalition. And it's just one, you know, faux pas after another. One huge incompetent failure after another just follows this woman. I mean, physically, she's so gangly and disproportionate and, you know, so clumsy. And basically, that's the way that she is. That is her character. She's clumsy and incompetent. She's not a prime minister. You know, she's a second rate minister rather than a prime minister. I mean, losing the mandate like that was just unbelievable. Then she went on from that. She went over to South Africa. Why she would go to Africa wanting to do deals with Africa, I don't know. Is Africa a country that creates lots of things that we want here in Britain? No, it isn't. Africa is the biggest recipient of foreign aid. Yet she goes over to Africa, apparently to make trade deals. And bear in mind, this is the land of the dead white farmer, where masses of white farmers have been murdered, brutally murdered by angry black mobs. And on top of that, they're now seizing the farmers' land, and they're writing it into law that they can seize the farmers' land and not even pay for it. And she goes over there and dances like she's dancing on the dead. I've never seen anything so disrespectful to white people as Theresa May dancing in Africa when all around her these white farmers are dying. Absolutely sickening to see that. And then she was asked about what the black government was doing, stealing all this land from the farmers. And she said, oh, well, it's perfectly fine if they write it into law. So long as they do it legally, it's perfectly fine. Theft is fine if it's done legally. I think this is probably one of the defining moments of her premiership, Max, was her dancing on the dead bodies of the white farmers, I think.
Well, I think irrespective of the situation with regard to the white farmers, and I take your point that she should have been more concerned with them than she was with the lightheartedness of dancing. But I think that she's probably got this a kind of mental image of herself, which is far more far cooler, shall we say, than everybody else has of her. And she probably imagined that she's actually quite a good dancer. And on these a couple of occasions when she's been put in a position where she's been invited to dance, she's just started to dance. And you can, on those occasions, you can see her face looking quite tortured as she's sort of looking around at everybody else's face and seeing the looks of consternation on their face because that they're seeing the reality of somebody who can't dance. And she's thinking she's actually moving quite fluidly. And it happened both in Africa and it also happened on the stage at the Conservative Party conference, didn't it, where she came dancing out looking, you know, incredibly awkward. But she does generally have quite an awkward gait in the way that she walks. And as I've said before, you know, she does have an unfortunate way of gurning in front of the camera as well. And
she reminds me of an ostrich or a chicken, like an ostrich or a chicken. When I see her walk, it's like I'm expecting her to start pecking the ground for worms. Just something about her. You mentioned that conference then. I mean, the conference the year before that, I mean, that was hilarious as well. All the backdrop fell down behind her and she lost her voice and couldn't speak.
And the chap gave her the P45 as well.
Yeah. There are so many. I mean, there's just too many moments to actually list. I mean, these are just from memory. I'm sure somewhere there must be a huge list being compiled of all the incompetence and mishaps and dreadful things she did. I mean, she's got to have been the worst prime minister, I think, that we've ever had in Britain. And, you know, I don't say that lightly because maybe not. Winston Churchill was pretty bad. I mean, he killed lots and lots of white people, destroyed half of Europe. But in living memory, I think she's definitely the worst prime minister that I can recall. And as I said, I'm promising over 100 times that we're going to leave with no deal if a deal is rejected, and then breaking a word, breaking a promise. I mean, the woman can't even keep a promise to the electorate. She has to break that. But anyway, so farewell and thank you very much finally for going, Theresa May. And let's hope we have a much better male prime minister for the next couple of years, basically until the next general election. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Hope Not Hate and the fact that is actually related to this, because David Cameron and Theresa May, I believe David Cameron was an honorary functionary of Hope Not Hate at one time, but when they changed non-violent extremism, when they brought this term in, non-violent extremism, Hope Not Hate really ran with that and started calling everybody to the right of the Conservative Party an extremist. I know you've been looking into this and wanted to talk about that a little bit here, Max. So do you want to tell us what you've been finding out about Hope Not Hate?
Yeah, well, it was just the various videos that have been posted on the internet relating to Robbie Mullin and Matthew Collins and their involvement with the Jack Renshaw trial, it's just that I've seen a number of occasions where they've kind of tried to give the impression that they are fulfilling a public service, when in reality what they're doing is they are directing their activity at depriving one section of the political spectrum of their right to freedom of speech and freedom of expression. There was a statement made in one of the videos by Matthew Collins, I believe, where Matthew Collins said that the purpose of Hope Not Hate was to undermine and disrupt the activities of far-right organisations. And it's just occurred to me that the hypocrisy that exists when they also try to justify their position and justify their activities on the basis that they're being even-handed. And so on their website now, there are some sections that are devoted to Islamic extremism. But those sections seem to be, perhaps I'm wrong in this, but they do seem to be frozen, and where they're not updated on a regular basis. They're just a couple of pages that appear to have been posted there just as a sop to people who want to see some sort of action taken by them in order to counter Islamic extremism. But if you have a look at their website, it's quite interesting that the website mentions the BNP fairly quickly in the initial About Us section. So if you go to the About Us section, it mentions that Hope Not Hate was that the campaign was founded in 2004 to provide a positive antidote to the politics of hate. It then mentions the BNP, doesn't mention Islamic extremism at all. It then goes on to say that since 2010, Hope Not Hate has focused more on community politics. We have built peaceful and positive resistance to attempts by the English Defence League to divide communities, offered support to and run joint initiatives with Muslim organisations, and have begun campaigning against Islamic extremism. And they say they have begun campaigning. Well, 2010 was a long time ago now. It's almost a decade ago. And there doesn't seem to have been a great deal of campaigning by them against Muslim Islamist extremism. And in looking at their website and looking at the various sections of their website, there's a section called Join the Hope Action Fund. In that particular section, there are very, very few words relating to, or there's nothing, in fact, referring to the countering of Islamic terrorism. It says, the Hope Action Fund, we take on and defeat Nazis. We will step up with a donation. Will you step up with a donation to ensure that we can keep fighting the far right? So again, it's fighting the far right. During May, anyone who sets up a direct debit to support our work will receive a free copy of Matthew Collins' book, Nazi Terrorist, The Story of National Action. It is a quick, easy and secure process, and it will mean you're directly supporting our vital work. Well, there's 73 words there about anti-fascism ostensibly, but nothing there at all about Islamic terrorism. And if we go on to look at the other sections, there's the blog, the insiders blog, the news, and the right response. There are a number of articles that are written there, and I haven't had the time to go through all the articles and count the words, etc., of them, but there appears to only be one article that actually deals with Islamic extremism. And it says, it's just quoted as saying, we will engage with faith communities to better understand and challenge religious extremism, which is just 13 words. That's as far as it goes. But then if you look at all of the other articles that are held within those sections, the blog, the insiders blog, the news and the right response, there are a total of, I think it was over 90 articles. And in most of those articles, there is very, very little written at all about, as I say, about Islamic extremism. And I've been through the various sections, and I've looked at the tried to estimate as accurately as I can the amount of words that have been used there, and my examination has shown that there are something like 83,000 words written critically of white advocacy, of nationalist political parties, all of the organisations that Hope Not Hate would regard as manifestations of the far right, whereas there are only 5,402 words that are written about Islamic extremism, which means that it's over 15-1 in terms of the amount of their effort that they expend opposing the far right, as they call it, versus the amount of energy that they expend opposing Islamic extremism. And if you look at the sections on Hizbut Tahrir and El Mahajirun, it's very difficult to pronounce that word, what we find there is that even when they do produce those sections, those sections describe in a very matter-of-fact way the organizations that they that they're discussing, and the wording implies only a bland criticism of their beliefs, and their beliefs are presented in a, you know, quite a respectful way. There are no ad hominem attacks. There's no attempts to ridicule either the beliefs or the leaders. And this contrasts really starkly. So not only is there this 15-to-1 ratio in terms of the disproportionate amount of their time they spend harassing the far right, as they say, there is also this complete variance in terms of the tone of the information they contain on their website. One, with regard to Muslim extremism, where they are very reverent and they are respectful and, as I say, speak only in terms of very bland criticism of those beliefs, and certainly make no attempt to ridicule the beliefs and no attempt to ridicule the leaders involved. And this is in stark contrast to the many and ongoing articles they write, where they pick on unfortunate people, very often unlucky people, very often within right-wing organizations, and where they then pour scorn on them and ridicule them and lambast them in a way which is in stark contrast. And so I think that for them to claim that they are even-handed is quite frankly a complete joke. And I think what members of the political establishment need to realize, people who regard themselves as moderate, who perhaps on a day-to-day basis don't ever get involved in what might be described as the extreme ends of politics, but people who have been led to believe that when they're dealing with hope, not hate, they're dealing with people who are reasonable and balanced and fair, even-handed in terms of the way in which they approach extremism, it's fairly obvious that's not the case, that Hope Not Hate exists to attack and undermine and disrupt the campaigns and the activities of people who are nationalists, who are advocates for white interests, and those people who occupy the political center need to start treating them as such.
It's almost as if it's the token black character on the TV show that they used to have, and they used to always put a black character on there like they have in South Park. And it's like Hope Not Hate have got this token bit of the site that's devoted to Islamic extremism, so that they don't get accused of just going after white people and being racist against whites. I think there are about two pages in their State of Hate report. And of course, you know, when you look at what goes on in Islam, you look at the repression of women, you look at the genital mutilation, you look at the sex slavery that goes on, you look at the excuses for violence against women, about how they can beat their wives, how they can have multiple wives. I mean, you would imagine that a group that supposedly sets itself up against extremism and promoting British values, that's who they would be going after. Not after people like Nigel Farage or UKIP or whatever other poor unfortunate they've decided to pick on and slander. Because nearly all the time, these people that they actually pick on, they don't actually have the resources to answer back. They don't have the resources to take Hope Not Hate to court for libel or anything like that. So they just get away with it. And you end up with the politicians supporting them. As I said, David Cameron was something to do with them, some high up functionary that they listed when he was prime minister. And you think, well, hang on a minute, how can the politicians actually even be linked with this organization? Because it's a political organization. It masquerades as a charity, but it's basically about taking down and destroying political parties that or people that have different politics to the establishment politics. That's what it's about. And a parallel spy organization where they go to right-wing demonstrations or nationalist demonstrations. They bring their cameras along there. They video everybody there. And then they cross-reference that through Google, trying to find out who these people are. And they pay informers to go along to right-wing meetings. And they pay these informers to give them information. It's a parallel spying operation parallel to MI5. And yet, for some reason, it's just allowed to go on. It's allowed to pretend that it's a charity. I mean, who does it help? Who does this charity help? I can't think of anybody that it's devoted its money to helping. It just devotes that money to trying to silence the political opposition. And the political opposition won't be silenced. I think we're going to see a massive, massive result in the EU elections on Monday. As this podcast comes out, these results should be coming out by then, or they should have come out by then. I think we're going to see Nigel Farage's Brexit party is just going to be absolutely huge. And the Conservatives and Labour, they're going to be wiped out. So Hope Not Hate have failed in trying to take down the opposition. In actual fact, they've probably helped the opposition with the slander and the lies that they've told about us, because it just shows to people that we are telling the truth when we say that the political opposition in Britain are being censored. And they are the main instrument for that censorship and for putting pressure on people to not speak out about what they're seeing. I think it's an abominable organisation. It's a hateful organisation. You know, they are the real haters. You just have to read the tone that they have in their articles to see how much hatred that they actually have the people that dare to speak up for the interests of the British people. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, Max, that there is that huge disparity between the Muslim Islamic extremists that they talk about and the white nationalists. It really doesn't surprise me. And it just shows their hypocrisy, doesn't it?
And they've expanded their activities to reporting on issues in Australia, in Europe, generally, in the USA, in New Zealand, etc. But interestingly, there is no mention of the Israeli treatment of the Palestinians. And so this appears to be an arena where there is quite clearly hatred on both sides, where Hope Not Hate fear to tread. You know, there is absolutely no comment either one way or the other, actually, either pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli. They just completely steer clear of this. This arena where, as I say, there is such an immense amount of hate on both sides. And so in view of the fact they try and present themselves as this international organization that is fulfilling this useful function, they are ignoring the place where they possibly could do the most good.
Maybe that's something to do with where they get their funding from. Of course, they get a lot of funding from George Soros. And of course, in one of their State of Hate or whatever the magazine is called that they put out, it actually had a whole page full of making excuses for George Soros and saying, "Oh no, he's a really nice guy, really." But yeah. Well, I don't think Hope Not Hate are going to continue in this exalted position that they're in, especially after Tommy Robinson exposed them with that Panorama thing. I think the game's up. I think people know that they're just slander merchants, and the support, the public support, is on the side of nationalists now.
And I think if Nigel Farage makes has a landslide victory in these European elections and then follows it up when we have the next general election with a pretty much a landslide in the general election, because I think, you know, one may well be a consequence of the other. We could be in a situation where we have a prime minister who has crossed legal horns with Hope Not Hate, and so therefore may wish to make life a little less easy for them in the future.
Yeah, he could cut back on their funding, couldn't he? Could cut back on all government funding for them. That would be a good thing to do. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Max. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
To the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.